materials that were sent to you are identical to what's here.
Okay, good afternoon. I'll call to order the meeting of the Conference Committee on Senate File 2918. We do have a quorum on both sides of the table. For the members of the House, I welcome you back to the Pension Commission. I welcome Senator Higgins and Senator Dill to the Pension Commission for your service on the Conference Committee here. Senator Pappas and Senator Lynch will be on their way momentarily. We have the bill that was passed by both bodies is identical in most instances. Staff has identified about, I believe, 9 instances when there are differences. And Mr. Martin, maybe I'll just defer to you to your memo. If you don't have it, it's dated May 10th, 2010. And Mr. Martin, the first difference is what?
Members, the first item has to do with deferred annuities augmentation. This is in the article, the first article, which relates to the financial sustainability measures that the various pension funds have put together. We noted that there are differences in the effective dates of when the augmentation rates change. Apparently, the Gremlins got this during the process, and the Gremlins also got it during our memo. There are apparently a couple errors in our memo, too, on the dates. Generally, the House version is a year later than the Senate version. And the real question is, when should these augmentation rate changes
be
effective?
Maybe the plans can identify which versions they prefer. Somebody could come up to the table and tell us what dates we need to be going with for the effective dates for the deferred annuity augmentation interest rate. Mr. Bergstrom, identify yourself for the record.
Yep, Mr. Chair. My name is Dave Bergstrom, and I'm the director of the Minnesota State Retirement System. We prefer the House effective date. It gives us more time to notify the affected parties, and it allows us more time to program the changes. So we prefer a little more time to give proper notification to the participants of the change.
And are all the effective dates that were in the House version exactly the way the plans want them? Are there any changes in those effective dates?
Mr. Chair, I have one for MSRS.
Okay.
And it's the Section 9 one for the MSRS general MTC employees. So we'd like to make that consistent with the December 31st, 2011. And I think on page, if you go with the House version, having a little trouble reading this stuff to go by, on 910, you would change the June 30th to January 1, 2012. And then on 9/11, the June 30th, 2011 to December 31st. 2011.
Could you repeat that? This is.
Yep. Sorry, my.
We don't have the full bills before us.
Yeah, I'm working off the.
We have the side by side where it's effective. Okay, go ahead.
Yep. And Mr. Martin can help me if I'm off here, but on 9/10 on the House version, the June 30th of 2011 would read January 1 of 2012, and then 9.11 would read instead of June 30th, December 31st, 2011.
Okay.
And that's the only one that I noticed, I think.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chair?
Sir Higgins.
I noticed that on Section 64, the effective date is the same House and Senate, unlike what the memo says. So it's like July 1st of this year. Unless I read something.
Section 64.
Yeah. 64. Is there something other than the effective date that we're looking at?
Well, I think that's for the whole section of law, not the annuity dates. It's for everything in there, not just.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Like I said.
Does anybody else have any concerns or issues with the effective dates of the deferred annuity augmentation interest rates? Are there any other changes? Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I haven't found them in the side-by-side, but in this other sheet that you gave me earlier, and just looking down, as I understood what Mr. Bergstrom said, it wouldn't it be easier if they were all the same date? There's slight differences, like I mean, what's the difference between January 1st, 2012 and December 31st, 2011? It's only a day apart. Why not just have a consistent date throughout the whole, throughout the, all those different plans?
Mr. Bergson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dill, I think it's more just drafting. The idea was to have all of them the same dates, but each section is worded a little bit differently. I know TRA had a slightly different date, and Ms. Hacking can explain that.
Lori Hacking, TRA.
Hacking.
We prefer using a fiscal June 30th end date. It's just the way our records run and our statements go out. So we're just slightly different from MSRS and Paris, so we prefer the date as shown in the House version of the legislation.
Any other questions on this item? If not, Representative Murphy moves the House version with the amended language on MSRS General MTC employees effective date.
Yes.
Or not effective date, the effective date, yes. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Number two, actually number two and three kind of go together. And this is on St. Paul teachers. Mr. Martin and Mr. Kepler.
Members, just to give you some idea, difference two has to do with the contribution rate increases for the St. Paul teachers plan. They're scaled a little differently, and there's a little greater employer contribution increase in the House than in the Senate, and that's difference two. Difference three has to do with post-retirement increases, and the House has no suspension of the post-retirement increases for the St. Paul teachers plan, and the Senate version does.
Okay, and it's my understanding that the Senate amended it as in the part of the committee process. The House had the opportunity to do it or whatever got caught. Mr. Kepler, please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, Phil Kepler, St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association. The St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Board and the school district prefer the Senate language on the member and employer contribution increases. It's a 1% employer contribution increase. It's a more gradual phase-in for both the employer and employee, and for budgetary purposes and levy-setting purposes, the Senate language ended up working out to be a better increase for the district, and it is a lower contribution increase. It's down to 1% off of 2%. But with the combined employer contributions of 1% and 1%, we eliminate most of the current contribution deficiency under the last actuarial valuation.
Any questions? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Other than that, it would be easier. What was the justification for not going with 2%?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the school district petitioned for the lower contribution increase. Originally, we went to the Pension Commission with a 2% employer and a 1% employee. And the school district petitioned for the lower contribution increase for budgetary purposes. They're laying off people right now on a fairly significant scale. They're running an early retirement incentive to try and mitigate that. And the additional 1% employer contribution just would have been prohibitive for them from their perspective, from a budgetary standpoint.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kepler, have you figured out what cost to the plan that will have?
Mr. Kepler.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, 1% on our payroll base of about $250 million a year is $2.5
million. And, Mr. Chair, Mr. Kepler, how much longer will it take you to get to full funded based on the assumptions you're making?
Mr. Kepler.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, that is a, I mean, we're...
Pretend you have a golden ball.
Right. Based on the actuarial valuation, assuming all the assumptions hold, We're still carrying a contribution deficiency of about 0.7%. So in theory, the contributions are not adequate. We would have to have favorable experience on demographic or economic variables of one sort or another to overcome that 0.7%, all else remaining equal. Contribution increases probably won't rise under the situation that the district is facing, and probably for, you know, at least the next 5 or 6 years, we're going to see austerity reign. And so I would expect that we're going to see some actuarial gains on the payroll side. And confidence being that feeling man has before he fully understands the situation, we're fairly confident that we can beat the 8.5% assumed rate of return over any significant period. We've done that over the last decade by a significant margin. The past is no guarantee of future performance, as all the folks in the investment world will remind us. But that's the hope. We're trying to make this thing as it can't be painless. We're trying to distribute the pain fairly and try not to dole out any more than we have to through these mitigating measures.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more question.
Sure, go ahead.
Mr. Kapler, and does all the interested parties support the Senate position than the House position?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, the differences between the two are really on the employer contribution increase. The Senate also has, which is a different issue, post-retirement increase freeze for 1 year for the January 1, 2011 benefit payment year, and that's a difference between the two. If I'm a retiree, I naturally would rather have the increase than not, but the consensus that we are getting from our members is they all understand that everybody's going to have to pitch in something to try and put the bill back on a full funding path, and so we haven't heard a lot of grousing about that, frankly.
Shared sacrifice, Mr. Yes. Kapler.
Any other questions on these two differences? Okay, move
it. I move adoption of the Senate version.
Okay, for differences number 2 and 3, then Representative Murphy moves the Senate position. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Now, number 4 was an early retirement incentive. That was a bill that we heard from Senator Pogemiller over the summer, when he wasn't wearing a tie, by the way. We kept in the Senate bill, but we were told that there was a separate bill moving through the process having a early retirement incentive program that was actually preferred by the administration. It passed, the conference committee report passed the Senate on Saturday. I'm not sure where it is in the House at the moment, but apparently the administration is fine with the other bill so that the Senate does not need its provision. And so Representative Murphy moves the House position, which is basically removes the early incentive articles. Representative Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I did talk to you earlier about this, that I was concerned about that other bill that had passed. I didn't know that it had been heard by the Pension Commission and been, I would hope it had been vetted by the, is it PRA or MSRS that's relevant in the other bill? The early retirement incentive, is that okay with you guys? Not in this bill.
One that passed, how does it dovetail with the work that we do here, and are there any implications to the fund? Ms. Vanek, could you please identify yourself for the record?
Mr. Chair and members, Mary Vanek. Senator Pappas, it's the health insurance provision, and while there may be additional retirements both in MSRS and the state employees who are covered by PARA have been down for the year, so we may see a few more retirements than we otherwise would, but I don't expect it to mean that we're going to see an increasing number of retirements that would affect the plans. So we're fine with the bill.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Murphy moves that the difference number 4, that is to accept the House version, which is to delete Article 10, be adopted. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Now we have, 5 and 6 both deal with MRF. Let's deal with these separately. Number 5 was a House floor amendment dealing with, I guess, a floor and a ceiling for the contributions. this is something the Senate obviously is not quite familiar with, so we'd probably need to hear from the city of Minneapolis, probably from the House, on and Mr. Martin, just what this does, and could somebody explain this to us then? So, Professor Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the provision, basically the way it is in the Senate provision, is that the state makes a contribution, the locals make a contribution, and the locals are on the hook for everything over, and you know, if there's a shortfall, the locals would be on the hook for that. And what this does is actually put a ceiling on that amount that's at $34 million a year. So we'd agreed, I mean, I think in the Senate and in the House, $27 million total contribution, or 27 around that, is the whatever the number is. I'm
27.
Making up numbers. But is the number that's, we're equal on that for this floor. We're just putting a ceiling on top of that so that the local governments can at least have kind of a range of expectation about what year by year it might come out to. It looks like, depending on what we choose for the state contribution, you know, in the House positions, it's $15 million a year, and that would push out the full funding date by about a year and a half to put this ceiling in place.
Does anybody wish to be heard on this difference? Okay, is there any questions on it? If not, then now I guess this is an either or. The Senate and the House version would be inconsistent with each other, so we'd have to choose them, or there's no way to blend them. Okay.
And members, if you, when you resolve difference number six, which is the dollar amount of the state contribution, there would have to be some tailoring of the dollar amounts in the contribution language, depending upon how you do it. Well, if you went to the Senate position for the state money, that does change some of the references to the state funds, the state contribution that's part of
okay. Well, and before we adopt five, let's discuss six, and since they do tie into each other, the Senate position was to have a contribution in fiscal year 2013 of $27.5 million. The House wanted $10 million this fiscal year in fiscal year 2011. And then $15 million annually after that. I think the finance chairs in both bodies have told us we're not going to have the $10 million for this year. Now, Rev. Thiessen did advise me, asked me if we could talk about, what is it, $12.75 or something like that, split the 27.5 into 2 years. I talked to Senator Cohen. He says that's fine, you know, because it's the same amount, just split in two fiscal years instead of one. So if we did that, how does this affect difference five then? If we, instead of 27.5 in 1 year, split that amount into the 2 years of the next biennium, and how does that affect difference five?
And then, Mr. Chair, to go up to the 27.5 per year in the
right,
in
futures, it'd be $27.5 million, but the first 2 years of the next biennium, it'd be half of 27.5.
And we'd be starting in 2011, Mr. Chair?
We are in, yes, 2000, the next fiscal, after we get on this biennium. So right now we're starting fiscal year 2012, which would be July 1st of 2011.
Yeah.
Right.
Reverend Murphy. Mr. Chair, I would prefer that because I think the message that we want to send to the MRF participants and the people that are already retired is that of a commitment by the state that we recognize the problem and we want to try to start solving it as soon as possible. And that's why the House put in the $10 million one-time cash in our bill, and now that that's not there anymore, this could be a solution to keep our commitment and to show a sign of good faith that we are starting as soon as possible to recognize the problem. And it might even make PERA a little happier and more confident for 6 months earlier that they have consented to be the managers of the PER or of the MRF funds. I think it's a good sign for our commitment.
I guess what we'd be looking at is to have what the proposal might be to have fiscal year 2012, it'd be, by my math, $13.75 million. fiscal year 2013, $13.75 million. Thereafter, $27.5 million per year. I think that's the proposal. Okay.
And that change, members, would occur if you look on page 11, if you're side by side, that's the provision 422A101 subdivision 3 is set forth there. And we have to craft this language, but it would be, if you look on the House language, around 177.12, 177.13, that's where the language would occur, and it would have to be some sort of a table crafted. And additionally, what I was referring to earlier, if you look on page 10 of the side-by-side, looking at the House language, for instance, at page 167.11, you'll see there's a reference to plus state aid of X or Y, whichever applies. You would have to put in some reference there, which ties into the 422A101 subdivision 3 language. So the House proposal was the current $9 million and then 15 whenever that applies. We would now have this year 9, then it would be 9 plus 13.75 for 2 years, and then 9 plus 27.5 for...
Right. We're not affecting the base that we've already been doing. That $9 million that we've been doing for years still continues. This is added on to that.
So we have to do some tailoring of this language to make it work.
Okay.
And then about number 5?
Well, why don't we adopt the numbers first, because then that would affect number 5. So on the different 6, Representative Murphy moves. Does it matter whether you adopt House or Senate? Okay, the Senate language with the following changes. The Senate had nothing in fiscal year 11, so we don't need to deal with that. But to change the increased contribution to fiscal year 2012 to $13.75 million, fiscal year 2013, $13.75 million, and starting in fiscal year 2014 to $27.5 million, and thereafter. Okay? Anybody want to be heard on that? That's the motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Now let's back up to number 5. How does this affect the floor and the ceiling, then, as we, in the House language?
Mr. Chair, sorry.
Yeah. Representative Thiessen.
So the number, that the floor in the House language is the same floor, is the same number that local share that was in the Senate language. That hasn't changed.
Okay.
So I think we can keep the floor and the ceiling. I don't think it makes any difference. The only difference it makes is that we'll get actually the full funding quicker.
Okay. Anybody want to be heard on that issue? Okay, then Representative Murphy moves the House language on difference number 5. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. That's okay, 5 and 6. Now, number 7 was the issue that Representative Poppe brought to the Pensions Commission. We spent quite a bit of time on, where she had a constituent that was in, I think it was TRA, then got promoted and went into unclassified. She wanted to buy back because she changed from one plan to another, could not do that. Apparently, the House has her being able to buy back the provision at full actuarial value. Can somebody from the plan come forward and tell us whether this is the language that is acceptable to the plan? Mr. Thompson, please identify yourself for the record.
Luther Thompson from TRA. Yes, you're correct. The Pension Commission did hear this individual member bill. When it came before House Government Ops, it had been changed so that the member picked up the full amount, the full actuarial cost, if she chose to do this. This was where a person had been covered by MSRS. The position was reclassified to a TRA position. She didn't know that there was an impact on her pension choices. So I think when we testified on this before House Government Ops, both this position was okay with MSRS and TRA, and it was approved then.
Okay, so there's not no opposition to the way it is right now?
Right.
Okay, anybody else want to be heard on this? Yeah. Senator Lynch.
Mr. Chair, I'm just interested to know if I should be concerned about the precedent that this might set. And I wonder if Mr. Martin has any
Does anybody have any thoughts on that?
Council.
I mean, is this a good idea or a bad idea for this particular individual, or for going forward, or is this going to snap back at us?
Yeah. Members, we've had relatively little or no experience that I can recall of TRA members in this sort of circumstance. We've had TRA members who are, MNSCU members covered by IRAP. We have had some MNSCU members covered by IRAP who had affirmatively elected IRAP and then by virtue of the investment markets or circumstances decided that they made an error. This is the only circumstance I can think of where the individual was moved by default without affirmatively selecting IRAP. So I'm not sure that there's any precedent from before for this, but it also happens relatively infrequently based on the lack of having members with a similar problem come to the commission. I don't know that MNSCU is represented here, so okay. They would be in the best position to know whether this would cause a problem. I'm not sure TRA can speak on their behalf. One of the complications, this constituent was covered by MSRS General by virtue of being given a lateral promotion, became eligible for either TRA or IRAP. So this person was changing pension coverage in any event, could not keep her MSRS General plan coverage. That may have added to some of the confusion. It also involves more pension plans as a consequence.
Okay, any further questions on this issue?
Mr. Thompson, okay. Might.
Mr. Thompson, have any further thoughts?
Luther Thompson from TRA. The only question was whether or not MNSCU had any thoughts about this. I can only relate to you. What happened at government ops is that they had told us that they were okay with it because in this case she had been reclassified and didn't know if she'd been defaulted into IRAP.
Well, there's been plenty of time since the bill was heard in policy committee, so. Okay, Representative Murphy moves in the House position on difference number 7. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Difference number 8 was a floor amendment by Representative Kahn. She's not here, but can somebody explain what this issue is?
I can start. There are two provisions here. The first one relates to MSRS General. The second relates to PERA Police and Fire. It has to do with the University of Minnesota, which is implementing furloughs. MSRS General covers the administrative staff at the University of Minnesota. PERA Police and Fire covers the University of Minnesota Police. If these individuals are furloughed and lose either service or salary credit as a consequence by virtue of the furlough, and they want or need that service credit for rounding out their high five or rule of 90 eligibility or for whatever reason, this allows them to acquire that service credit the same way they would have had they been granted a leave of absence, an unpaid leave of absence.
Okay. Does MSRS and PER, since it was a floor amendment, it probably wasn't presented. Do you have any issues or
no.
concerns with this?
It was.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, it was done in
House Finance.
House Finance, okay.
And then it went to Ways and Means after that.
Okay.
And then.
Any issues here, Mr. Bergstrom?
Mr. Chair, Dave Bergstrom from the State Retirement System. We have no issues. It's the same that people use for strike time or leave time. And I think they're furloughing people for 3 days, so it's a fairly insignificant amount.
Any questions? Sarah Pappas.
Well, I didn't realize it was 3 days, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering the comparison between this and the red light principal who took the kind of a medical leave of absence after the attack in Red Lake and then wanted to be able to get credit for that period. Is there any kind of similarity here? And I don't remember if he was in TRA, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he had a medical leave, and then he came back, and he was on for, and it, and he wanted to combine it, and they had the break and so forth. So that it was really a complicated case.
And it was a different kind of situation than this.
Yes, members, the end product result, that individual can obtain service credit at his expense, and the provision here is these individuals can obtain service and salary credit at their expense.
Okay.
So you're treating them the same. I'm not sure that they're identical circumstances, but there is some similarity.
Same principle.
There are desires.
And so all we're doing, Mr. Chairman, is saying that they have the option to obtain service credit here, and this gentleman also had the option.
Yes.
Without legislation, or did we pass legislation?
We did not act on his. That was, but he still has the upper. That was not in the bill. Right.
Members, I think the last version had him at his expense.
Right.
And
we didn't act on it.
He was going to go back and check with him further
to see
or something.
If he gets some help with that or something from the
yes,
school.
And nothing ever transpired after that.
Never heard back from him. So.
All right. Well, next year.
Okay. So then,
Mr. Chair, I move the House version.
Representative Murphy moves the House version on difference number 8. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Number 9 was a House floor amendment, as I understand it, on directing a study of the plans on the feasibility of defined contribution plans. In looking at the language, I had some concerns that it was directing the staff of the Pensions Commission to do this study, and of course that puts them in an awkward position. If they do the study on this, then they may have to come back at us and tell us whether it's a good idea or not. So we it might be more appropriate to have the funds themselves to the study if they're going to be in a position to do that. And I don't know if Mr. Bicker is around, but we were wondering if maybe the State Board of Investment could convene the meeting and have the plans themselves look at this and get back to us. MSRF, PRA, TRA, what do you think about that? I mean, are you in a position to make a recommendation as to whether or not defined contribution plans are feasible and some of the issues ought to be considered in that? As opposed to having our staff do that. What's your thoughts, Ms. Hacking?
Mr. Chair, Laurie Hacking with TRA. I think we would be amenable to conducting a study if that's the direction from the Pension Commission. I don't know that it needs to be in statute. You may want to be more flexible about it than putting it in statute.
Well, since it passed as a House floor amendment, I asked to have some minor language to pass that. Okay. Amos, Kathleen, we've got a moment here. My thoughts were if we're going to be done, we ought to direct that there be a meeting convened but by a certain date so that you don't wait until the end of the year to do it. Instead of having the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement, we thought we'd just direct the State Board of Investment to convene the meeting. And everybody's in the same building, so you should be able to kind of figure it out. And rather than have it go to the chair of the GovOps committees in both bodies, we thought it would be more appropriate to send it to the chair, the vice chair, the executive director of the Pensions Commission rather than the policy committees. I mean, we're the ones who care about it. So,
Members, this would be sending it to the Pension Commission in addition to the GovOps committee chairs.
Because by January 15th, we may not know who's going to be appointed to the Pensions Commission, but at least the staff is going to be here. So.
And members, on line 1.6, there was a verbal floor amendment to this language that didn't get into the unofficial engrossment. This is the feasibility language that Representative Murphy asked for. So that's on your amendment. So it does make the language clean with what was actually enacted by the House.
And I recognize the House is probably going back in floor session right about now,
definitely.
So we probably need to figure out what we're doing here. But I want the funds to have an opportunity to kind of look at the language and figure out if it's going to work or not. Any thoughts?
Mr. Chair, just a suggestion. Instead of the State Board of Investment, how about the Executive Director of the State Board of Investment?
Oh, yes. Right. Sure. We'll incorporate Executive Director.
Places.
Yeah, on what page one line 4 and page 1 line 7 it'd be the executive director, right, of the State Board of Investment. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, you know, it talks about the amount of time and the manner. I think you would want to look at the cost impact of this rather than just the time and the manner, because that's sure. really the big issue.
Feasibility, I think. Does feasibility cover that, or
financial feasibility? If the amendment, I
had. Well, I think we do want that information. Yeah. So
because that's really the kind of the bottom line, I think. Mm-hmm. Is
so we'll incorporate financial feasibility, page 1, line 6. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's really important, because if we look at what's happened with MRF and having a close fund, I mean, that could be an important lesson that would be part of this study, if we closed all the funds.
Is there anybody, if you had time to look at the 18A amendment, and does anybody want to be heard on the 18A amendment? Are we okay? Anything else?
I move.
Okay, so Representative Murphy moves the 18A amendment with those incorporations to change the State Board of Investment to the Executive Director of the State Board of Investment, and from feasibility to financial feasibility.
Of Article 1, yeah.
So the Representative Murphy moves the 18A amendment on that motion.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Senator Higgins.
I'm sorry. I'm still stuck on the feasibility piece, because the feasibility of moving to the other kind is really different than the cost of it.
Well, that's why
So I'm not sure the financial feasibility is the. I mean, I don't think you want to delete just the feasibility of and insert the financial feasibility, because I think the feasibility is different from the cost.
That's it right there.
So you probably are you suggesting feasibility and the
financial impact?
Financial impact.
Some word like that.
Okay. About financial impact and feasibility of? Would that work?
I think so.
Okay.
That's
okay, we'll incorporate that. Yeah, 1.6, financial feasibility, financial impact
and feasibility.
The feasibility of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got that? Anything else on the 118A amendment? Sarah Litch.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, in the absence of this language, wouldn't the plans be able to proceed in this direction? They could do this without this language. And I guess what I'm sort of trying to gauge is, I think, though I haven't been on the commission a real long time, but it seems to me that usually there's a discussion among the commission about what we're going to work on during the interim, or what our goals are during the interim, or kind of the direction we want to go. And couldn't this be, I would think that something like this would be a part of that kind of conversation.
It's true. We don't need to direct ourselves what to look at. In fact, I've sometimes had some concerns about putting in session law or statute that we're supposed to look at things when we can just do that. This was a House floor amendment, you know, and I want to respect the fact that, you know, there was a desire to at least look at this issue and make that commitment. Plus, I don't know who's going to be in the legislature next year. I don't know who's going to be on the pension commission next year. So to the extent that we're giving direction to the next pension commission, next legislature, you know, that might be something that, you know, at least we can signal, you know, a desire that there was some interest in looking at that. Any thoughts?
Just a separate problem. I can't see where this fits in on the side-by-side. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Have any, could someone tell me that?
So the very last page.
Remember, page 14.
Okay. Nine.
Just convenient. Mr. Chairman,
okay. Thank you.
Sorry.
Mr. Chair, I'm trying to understand that, you know, I'm trying to engross your amendment to the language. So what you're saying is that the study will be conducted by the representatives from the various state pension funds, but it's only going to be convened by the executive director of the State Board of Investment. Is that correct?
Yes.
Not that the State Board of Investment is doing the study. The funds have the capability of doing the study.
I think within their staff they can all work out how they're going to staff it, what they're going to do. But the way the House language was, the onus, the staffing, everything was falling on the Pension Commission staff.
Okay.
And we're kind of punting the ball in the other direction. And if the state, if how Mr. Bicker wants to staff it, or if other the major funds can work it out, they all know each other, so I think they can kind of figure out how a way to work this out. Or do you want more direction from us? Ms. Vanek.
Mr. Chair, members, Mary Vanek, we don't think you need to say convened by the executive director of the state board. You can either put it into statute that the three statewide funds will work together to conduct this study and give us the report deadline, or you can just direct us to, it doesn't even need to be in statute. We'll make that commitment to you that we will conduct the study and report back. But we certainly don't need it convened by the executive director of the state board. It would be the three systems that would do the work and develop the report to the legislature.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I think that would be my preference, okay, is to just, they have said they'll do the study. I don't think we need language.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this was a pretty strong House position brought to us by people on the, by Republicans that were interested in looking at this issue. And as we're moving toward trying to get a signed bill, I think it would be important that we include this language in the bill and not just direct them.
Mr. Chair, that it came about as part of the conversation about reform, and that seemed to be one of the things that the representative that offered this thought that we hadn't paid quite enough attention to in our bill, and I accepted the amendment as a sign that we were willing to look at reform. But this was after the House had soundly defeated the resolution or the amendment that said that everyone should be in a defined contribution plan.
Now, the problem is if we delete the reference to the executive director of State Board of Investment, we got to have somebody convening the meeting and somebody staffing it. What do we put?
Mr. Chair, could you just, on the first line, 6912, just say representatives from the various statewide pension plans shall meet to study the amount of time and whatever. And if you want me to direct or anybody, you know, I'd be happy to take the responsibility for it if you need to put it in law. So
you can.
But otherwise, as a group, we can do it as well. We usually work well together.
So a study group consisting of representatives from the various state pension plans shall study.
I mean,
the amount of time, financial feasibility, and the manner. I don't quite get this language right.
Financial impact
and feasibility.
Okay. What does manner mean? Time and manner.
The manner in which the plans will be transferred.
Done, I guess.
In which the various state pension plans may be transferred from defined benefit to defined contribution plans. Administrative support for the study group shall be provided by the various state pension plans. And I think you should tell us the language here.
Yes. Well, okay.
Somebody who knows how to write language. But something like that, right?
Basically, we'd be rewriting this section to say that it will be convened. I think we still need a date by which you got to start.
Yep.
Okay. So if August 2nd, 2010 works out, that it'd be convened by the plans themselves. They would study the time, the manner, the financial impact, and feasibility. Okay.
Time, the manner, financial impact.
And then instead of providing it to the policy committees of the legislature, it would be to the chair, the vice chair, the executive director of the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement. Okay. Could we vote on that
concept,
I guess, and then have Mr. Martin work the language on out, and we'll make sure we flag it to make sure that the conferees are all satisfied with that. Is that okay with everybody? Okay?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Murphy moves the language. Sarah Lynch.
Adoption of the concept.
For first. We'll adopt the concept first and then move it into the bill. Okay. Adopting the concept. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Wait.
Senator Lynch.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to make a comment before the
yeah,
vote.
That's fine.
And that is that I'm uncomfortable putting this into statute. And part of the
it'd
reason...
It'd be a session law. Session
well,
law.
I'm,
statute,
I'm
yeah.
uncomfortable yeah. putting this into our bill.
Yeah.
And our pension policy says that there's a general preference for defined benefit plans over defined contribution plans. That's one of our principles.
I know.
And so I'm speaking against the inclusion of this in our bill for that reason. I am not opposed to the plans on their own accord in looking into this and providing information back to the commission, but I think that it's inconsistent with our pension policy and principles.
Well, the policy and principles isn't exactly like a constitution. They can be changed, and so if one wants to put some phrase in here saying despite the preference in the policy for defined benefit plans, it is at this time believed that it's a good idea to do the study or something. But the point is no, you know, nothing ever, nobody ever said, was I the, no. And representatives, who was on it when we did this? Representative Smith and me? And Murphy?
Pardon?
Who was on it when we,
the
when we did the principles?
All of us.
Well, we revised
them
about
that.
2 years ago.
Okay.
Under the leadership of Representative Murphy. So.
Oh, I remember that when they were done under the leadership of Representative Jefferson.
And so,
yeah.
And then Senator Lynch did such a good job with them.
Yeah.
So that's why she remembers them so well.
Well, I guess I say thinking that you're going to look at something, if you want to specifically acknowledge that we're looking at something in the principles that could be added, but I think there.
No, we don't want to change the principles.
Just to add to what Representative Thiessen said, though, no one from the governor's office has talked to me. I've heard nothing from the executive branch, any concerns, but I've heard rumblings that they would like to see some indication of reform or something, and I took reform to mean something about defined contribution plans. So if that's going to help this bill get signed, you know, I'm willing to do it. I agree with Senator Lynch because you may remember Representative Thiessen had an issue and wanted. And I said, no, we'll just do it. We did it. But as I say, because there's going to be, you know, maybe changes next year. I don't know what's in store. But you know, if we feel it's something ought to be looked at by the Pension Commission, I don't control that. We don't control that. It's up to the next Pension Commission. So maybe something ought to be studied and kick it to them. Senator Dill.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if I remember the sequence of discussion here, I believe Representative Murphy said there was an amendment offered to convert everything to a defined contribution plan, which was
soundly defeated.
Defeated, and this was kind of the follow-up, backup amendment that came along immediately thereafter.
Oh, yeah. Turned into a study, right? Yeah,
So then the study language is there, and then you've got that element that is interested in this subject, and you made the comment, yeah. Representative Thiessen, about getting the thing passed and maybe needing this to make things, and Mr. Chairman, you're mentioning also that maybe we need something in there to make it look like we're thinking about some reform.
If that helps get the bill signed, I'm for it. We spent a year on this darn thing, and I don't want it to go down the drain. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, one of the things Representative Nelson was the key speaker about, the whole issue of why we shouldn't have defined contribution, and did an excellent job. Then this came along, but we had passed out the 2008 report and the recommendation of the 2008, and the people that were the proponents of the First Amendment dealing with the subject, and then this said, well, 2008, that's too long ago. And I thought, I didn't go that route and mm-hmm. call them on that, but didn't they realize that most of the statistical records that we get or comments that we get are at least 2 years old? and they don't get their numbers all calculated before that. And so it really was one of the more recent reports that we had had. And we had had discussions in this commission about that report and when I was chair and the year before that. And so it just seemed easier to accept. I wish I had thought of what Senator Lynch said about our principal at the moment, but I wasn't that quick on my feet that day.
Actually, I think Mr. Martin may have something almost ready to go, so we don't have to vote on a concept. Mr. Martin.
Members, I would suggest in as an alternative to the language that's on page 414, the following, section 85, defined contribution plan study, on or before August 2nd, 2010, representatives from the various state pension plans shall study the amount of time for the financial implications of the feasibility of and the manner in which the various state pension plans may be transferred from defined benefit plans to defined contribution plans. The report must be provided no later than January 15th, 2011, to the chair, vice chair, and executive director of the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement, the chair and ranking minority caucus member of the Senate State and Local Government Operations and Oversight Committee, and the chair and ranking minority caucus member of the House State and Local Government Operations Reform, Technology, and Elections Committee.
Yeah, just we normally don't say caucus. We just say the ranking minority member of the chair, the ranking minority member of. So, delete the word caucus. Mr. Sy, did you have your testimony? Please welcome to the conference committee. Please identify yourself for record.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Elliot Sy. I'm the executive director of AFSCME Council 5, representing 43,000 state and local government and nonprofit employees. And I believe I'm speaking on behalf of our friends at MAPE today as well. We're all sharing some time today. We do not agree with this idea. Defined benefit pension is a contract between the state and the employees of the state. It is critical to continue for any sense of fairness. As we've talked about in earlier commission meetings, the average people in our unit only get about $13,000 to $14,000 a year. Defined contribution is a sure system of impoverishment for Minnesota's public workers. And this language particularly talks about practically a roadmap to replacing a defined benefit with a defined contribution. We would ask Mr. Chairman and members to let the funds do their thing outside of the statute, let them do a study if they wish, and bring that back if that's necessary. But frankly, we stand before you to defend the defined benefit pension plan, and we do not want to see it changed.
And Mr. Saig, you know, the amendment was offered on the Senate floor. I spoke strongly against it because that would have basically closed out the major funds now, and all new employees would have gone in defined contribution plans. And I said, look at the problems we've got with MRF, with just 5,000 employees in a closed fund. I mean, can you imagine what would happen with these hundreds of thousands of people 25 years from now if that were to happen? I don't know, though, what a study would do. I mean, that's why you do studies. I have a hunch I think I know what it's going to come back looking like, but I can't say for certain. But I'm certainly not opposed if people want to study it or look at it with or without legislative approval. But as I say, if the executive is looking to have something in this bill to help get this bill signed, you know, I'm okay with doing a study with or without the legislative direction to do it. But that doesn't bind anybody in the future. Even if they come back and say it's a good idea to do it, the Pension Commission or the legislature is not bound to do it, though. So, Mr. Sy.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for those comments. The language that Mr. Martin has put together talks about converting defined benefit to defined contribution as part of the study. And frankly, again, that's a social contract as far as we're concerned. We can't bargain pensions. They get legislated. And that it seems to us, is unnecessary. I would also add that on behalf of AFSCME and MAPE, we agree, Mr. Chairman, with Senator Lynch's understanding that this does not need to be in statutes, a study that can be done by the fund managers without it, and we would encourage the committee to take that approach.
Right. Perhaps maybe voluntary transfer. I mean, if somebody's in one plan right now and wants to voluntarily transfer over, which I think is what the Hanna amendment on the Senate floor offered, is to voluntary transfer. But the thrust of that amendment was to not change people's current status and only future employees. And Mr. Martin, is that something? How does the language you've got deal with that? So.
Members, I'm repeating the language here, which is transferred from defined benefit plan coverage to defined contribution plan coverage, whatever exactly transferred would mean. And it is, somewhat vague as to who it would apply to, whether you're shifting from the broad thrust of a defined benefit plan to defined contribution, and it leaves the implementation questions. Do you do it for everyone? Do you only do it for new hires? Do you do this only for general employees? Do you do it for public safety employees where they have no Social Security coverage? And
that would be part
this
of
would
study.
Be their only. Yeah. It doesn't direct all of the permutations that would go into this.
Legally, I don't know that you can force somebody from a defined benefit plan and a defined contribution plan. I mean, I think we'd all get sued if that. Mr. Representative Thiessen.
Well, and I was thinking that was only, building on that, I was thinking it was only for new, it would only be for new hires.
Yeah. But if that's our understanding, that is vague enough that, you know, they can look at even the option of forcing people in and say you can't do that and looking for new hires, I hope that the language would be encompassing enough to do that. Yeah. The more specific you make the language, then the more narrower you're going to make the options. But Mr. Stein, I certainly agree with what you're saying here, is that we don't want to force people from one plan to the other. And if... you know, but presumably they should study that issue as well, too.
Well, Mr. Chairman, again, we feel that the defined benefit is a contract.
Sure.
We are not permitted by law to negotiate that. We thought that on the House floor, Representative Nelson's comments about defined contribution were cogent, well taken. And, it ain't broken. It don't need to be fixed that way. It's being fixed in a way. And I would add, Mr. Chairman, as you're well aware, that we've taken every step, including increasing the employee contributions and employee contributions, flattening out the top. We've done everything, and we will continue to do everything to keep this plan very solvent and healthy. And we think this is basically unhealthy, and will create a lot of anxiety for a lot of public workers in the state to see the legislature doing it. Again, I think Senator Lynch has made a suggestion.
The House is under call. The House is under call. We've got to decide what we're going to do in here. Representative Murphy moves the House position as read by Mr. Martin. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Okay. Then.
Thank you.
Anything
Mr.
else?
Chair.
Senator Lynch.
Quickly, Mr. Chair, I wanted to make a suggestion regarding Article 4. Article 4 is not before us, or we don't have the copy in front of us, but Article 4 is the provision that made all of the changes to the MSRS unclassified plan that were recommended by this commission. On the floor of both bodies, that article was broken apart. And what's reflected in the report today, it is true that the House and the Senate position are the same. I am concerned, however, because Article 4, as it appears before us today, was not what was recommended by this commission. And we spent numerous hours, numerous days on Article 4. And further, I would say that back to our pension policy and principles, one of our primary components under pension benefit coverage number 3 says equal treatment within pension plans. There should be equal pension treatment of public employees in terms of the relationship between benefits and contributions. And so because of the inconsistency with our pension policy,
I'm going to have to recess the conference meeting. The House is under call.
I think this will be very good.
I'm going to recess the conference meeting. The House is under call.
Takes them a while to get it.
They got to get up the floor.
Barry was getting anxious?
Because it can take a while.
They're needed on the floor right now.
Are they going to come back here?
I'll have to find out. I don't know what's going on. They're needed on the floor right now.
They're taking up that bill we just passed.
Perhaps. We might be here for it. And then I got to have a vote on the conference committee report.
What couldn't they come?
I don't know. I mean,
within the family.
All right. The great great grandfather.
We're going?
Yeah.
Okay, good evening again. We are back in the conference committee on Senate File 2918. We still have a quorum on both sides. When we recessed, Sarah Lynch, you had the floor, so. Please proceed. Pick up where you left off in mid-sentence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it was literally mid-sentence. But I'll try to be just really brief. And what I would like to suggest is that we remove Article 4 in its entirety from our bill. And very simply, I have two reasons that I'm suggesting this. And the first reason is because while Article 4, as it is before us, the House and the Senate position are the same. What I think is problematic is that that is a result of amendments that transpired in both bodies. And particularly with Article 4, as with many other provisions in this bill, we spent hours and hours discussing and putting together thoughts for Article 4 over multiple days, over multiple months. And so I don't think that Article 4, as it has been presented in the conference committee report, represents the intent or the work of this commission. Second argument is that I believe that it is in that it conflicts with one of our pension principles, and that is under pension benefit coverage, it's listed as number 3, equal treatment within pension plans, which reads, there should be equal pension treatment of public employees in terms of the relationship between benefits and contributions. So members of the commission, in light of those two arguments, I am making a motion that Article 4 be removed from the report.
Sarah Lynch, let me just give a couple of thoughts on that, and I'm certainly open.
Mr. Chairman?
Welcome to discussion. Sarah Dale.
It's not in here.
No, it's in the whole bill.
Because it's in the whole, yeah.
The whole bill had an Article 4, which dealt with the unclassified positions. And the problem that we have with unclassified, this was a position that MSRS brought to us over the summer. The fact that you have a number of people in the unclassified service who can wait, if they remain in their employment, they can wait until they retire to decide whether, after 10 years of service, whether to go to undefined benefit or defined contribution. And that's a huge loophole, and it causes some uncertainty with the, the pension, the funds to figure out, how to book for it. So we can't really affect those current benefits, but for future employees, we said you've got basically 7 years to make the decision, which one do you want to be in, and then that's it. You don't get to hold it open for years and years. Now, the problem with legislators is that in 1997, we passed a law that provided that new legislators elected after 1996 were going to go into the unclassified MSRS plan. Which is a defined contribution plan. However, legislators were not given in 1997 the opportunity to switch over to defined benefit after 10 years, unlike the other 1,500 people in the unclassified service. So Article 4 basically applies to new hires. When we originally came out with a bill that came out of the Pension Commission and worked its way actually to the floors in both bodies, we also had a provision for legislators to elected since 1996 or those in the MSRS plan to make an option. We gave them a limited time period to do that, either 7 years or December January 1st of 2011, whichever is later. That provision was first to take, the legislature's part was taken up by an amendment on the Senate floor, and the House did the same thing. So since that article is now identical, we didn't have it really before us here. But the article is still in the bill. Senator Tomasoni had made a motion on the Senate floor to remove Article 4. That motion failed. But Senator Lynch is making basically the same motion right now to take Article 4 out of the bill, which would have the effect of not having the new hires under unclassified go in, you know, have this 7 years to decide which plan they want to be in. It would not affect legislators at all because they're no longer in the bill. But I think if I understand Senator Lynch's motion, it takes that out so that we can have the discussion later on about legislators and unclassified as one discussion, if I understand. Now, just for the members who are on the Pension Commission, you may remember we did discuss various parts of this over a serious time, but we started with the MSRS proposal, and as Mr. Bergstrom talked about, the fact that these unclassified people had, after 10 years of service, had a long period of time to make election to go. We ultimately did talk about legislators. We set it aside. We ultimately heard from Senator Tomasoni and Representative Mahoney, and it was much later that we actually focused on the legislators' part after we'd already done basically most of Article 4. They were ultimately merged because that was the same part of the statute that we were talking about. But, you know, I didn't see it as part of a package. It's just, you know, when we finally got to around legislators, this is where it went into. But as I say, it was both bodies made the decision to take legislators out, and so Senator Lynch is now saying that the whole article ought to go out.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Pappas.
I have a question regarding procedure. Mm-hmm. I thought in most conference committees you vote to put things into the conference committee report, not assume that everything's in and vote to take things out of the conference committee report.
We had not yet had a motion to adopt all the same and similar, all the other same parts of it. We've only focused on the differences here. So, because I left it open because there may be other changes to it.
So maybe we could have a separate vote on Article 4 about whether we, even though it's a same, about whether we want it in the conference committee report
as a
procedure instead of her motion to take it out. There's nothing in right now to take out.
Okay. Well, at some point, we have to vote on the whole rest of the bill. So if she votes to not accept, well, I guess maybe the proper motion would be to adopt Article 4,
right. Because
that's how we normally do it in conference committee. And if the votes aren't there to adopt Article 4, it's not in the bill.
Right.
But that's not what the motion that Senator Lynch made. So, you know, if you want to make the motion and speak against your own motion, that's been done too, Senator Lynch. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, yeah. I think both accomplish the same thing.
Okay.
And so I'm happy to
okay.
withdraw my motion. And
well, if somebody wants to move, if somebody wants to move a motion and you can speak against Article 4, it still gets us there the same way, same number of votes. So Representative Kahn.
I guess the question that I have is, who gets hurt without Article 4 in the bill? Is it just the problems
new
of
hires.
The administration? Of
Mr. Bergstrom's going to probably, since this is, he brought this issue to us in the first place. So, Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, my name is Dave Bergstrom. I'm the director of the state retirement system. What is happening under current law is people work until the day they retire, and they come into our office and say, I want to switch from the unclassified plan to the general plan, and it costs us, in some cases, $50,000, $60,000, $100,000. I don't have my actuarial report, but the contingent liability for the roughly 1,600 people in the plan is in the $40 to $50 million range because of the ability for people to do that. So in the provision that MSRS introduced, we wanted to shorten that for new employees to 7 years to avoid that adverse selection. And, you know, respectfully to Senator Lynch, it's an important provision to protect the general employee's retirement plan because they are the ones that take the liability. Just all of a sudden overnight, boom, their liabilities increase. And it's just something that we feel very strongly about.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir, Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bergstrom, I understand that it's very important, but how many state employees do you think are going to be hired between now and next year, next January, given state of the budget, the layoffs, et cetera, et cetera? Because you were talking about only new employees.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, I have no idea. But I've been trying to do this since 1993.
And, you know, and I've used just the staff of the legislature. People come and go all the time around this place. I don't think anybody can keep track of it all, but it happens a lot.
First of all, it's not realistically next January. It's realistically next May. I don't remember any time that we've
passed
the pension
bill. I understand, but I still think next
before.
Year we're going to be cutting and laying off people and not hiring
people. But I think whatever you think, we may be cutting and laying off people, but we are going to be hiring people, because particularly with the with the aging workforce in a certain place, I mean, I just think, just unless you think that state government is going to disappear, which it isn't, there is going to be the usual amount of turnover, whether there are new positions or not, and I think we can get that. And I just think it's financially irresponsible. I mean, I don't know why we haven't done it since 1993, but if we've finally gotten this far in doing it, I think it's a terrible mistake. And financially irresponsible at this point to not leave this section in, not let it go one more year. Who knows whether I don't remember what with this bill, I can't remember one provision. It's hard to remember a provision from 1 month to the next, never mind 1 year to the next, never mind a provision that has been proposed and didn't get into the bill. But I think when we've gotten this far, we've both made the same decision. We made the same decision, which some of us may or may not agree with, to take the legislators out of it for some reason. And I think it's irresponsible to take all of Article 4 out.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bergstrom, what's left in Article 4 has some impact on the cost savings of the bill in total?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, not short term, because it only applies to new hires, but in the long term. It was, I believe it was in 1993, we introduced a bill to cut this off for new hires. If we had done that, we would have had 16 years of new hires now who would not have had the option to switch. And I tried a couple different approaches during the time. And so short term absolutely has nothing to do with the billions of dollars or half a billion, well, billions of dollars we're saving in this bill. But long term it does. And for the 1,500 or so that someday will replace, it's a fairly high cost. I mean, if you take $40 to $50 million and divide it by 1,500, that's a pretty expensive provision. It's a nice feature to have, but it's expensive.
Mr. Chair.
Mr.
Chair, Mr. Bergstrom, do you think that Article 4 is an attempt at reform?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, absolutely.
Mr. Chair, I think this bill needs items of reform in it, and this is a good part of our reform.
Representatives.
Well, Mr. Bergstrom's at the table. Can you, how much this is, well, we can
follow
up later.
Okay. Okay. Any further discussion? Sir Dill.
Mr. Chairman, I'm listening to the House, and it sounds like they know what to do. They're convincing me we should, if we leave it in, we get the reform. Is that right?
Yes.
And Senator Lynch wants to take it out.
Right.
Could you tell me, Senator Lynch, one more time why you want to take it out?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dill, the bill that we're conferring tonight is the result of literally 12 months of work by this commission, hours and hours of discussion, and particularly, I mean, on many. This is probably true of each article. We probably on each article spent many hours over many days over many months. It troubles me that the provision as it is in the report tonight before us does not reflect the work of the commission. Rather, it reflects actions that transpired on the floor of both bodies. And so that's one reason. My second reason, again, is that we have the Principles of Pension Policy, which is a four-page document that this commission reviewed, I think, 2 years ago. The commission, the pension policy has been in place since 1955. 2 years ago, we went through each of the various provisions over many hours, over many days, over many months, with Representative Murphy's leadership, and reviewed those policy principles. And one of those principles says that equal treatment within pension plans, and it talks about providing equal treatment for all public employees. And while it is true that we are
elected,
we are all public employees. It's just the fact. And I'm just suggesting that this is in direct conflict with one of those pension policies. So for those two reasons, I believe that it should come out of the bill. And there will be an opportunity to revisit this at another time. And as has been indicated, the crux here is that the real impact is going to be on new hires. And if anyone thinks that there's going to be an influx of new hires to the state of Minnesota anytime soon, you're on the wrong page.
Mr. Chairman, so the two reasons are you worked a long time on this section and the equal treatment issue. But even beyond that, what is left in the bill is something that Mr. Bergstrom has wanted since 1993, and it sounds like a good step towards saving some money. So even though you worked a long time on it, maybe we're not treating the legislators like everybody else, what's left still seems to me like a very good idea.
Well, and keep in mind, too, although maybe the commission took a stand on it, the legislative bodies ultimately trump anything that comes out of any commission or any committee. So, Representative Smith.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my guiding principle in sitting on the House side of this conference committee is to follow the chair, my chair, and try to cause as little as trouble as possible. However, I do want to make an observation. I first will vote against removing Article 4 in any way the motion is forthcoming. I would step back and meander a little bit back to earlier what we did and remind the committee or the conference committee that the approval of the pension bill in the House floor was 109 votes positive and a little more than 20 negative. The partisan breakdown is 87-47. So maybe if you have a little dose of reality here and calm thinking, I would like the governor to sign this pension bill, and he will have an easier time to do so if the conference report would get another 109 votes. Earlier in the evening, you were confronted with a so-called Kiffmeyer amendment. And I laud the chair's attempt to hesitate to use the phrase water it down, I think, to make it more embracing and more realistic by introducing the word feasibility, for example, in the time and manner. I think that was a good attempt. To have rejected that amendment in total, like I think we did, goes a long way towards reducing the 109 votes on the floor of the House. And if you now want to take out Article 4, you're going to bring it close to an 87-47 vote on the House floor. That is not good news for a governor who then may be looking for a way to veto this bill. So I would suggest you leave Article 4 in, and you adjourn for the evening, and then maybe reconvene and revisit the so-called Kiffmeyer Amendment in any way you choose to make it better. Those are my thoughts.
Well, why don't we take care of the Article 4 issue? I'll see if there's any other issues on out. If it's the will of the conference committee to revisit the study, we can certainly do that, but I think we can deal with Senator Lynch making a motion to delete Article 4. I think we understand the intent here. So any further discussion on Senator Lynch's motion to delete Article 4? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
The motion does not prevail. Okay, is there anybody else who has, now Representative Smith raised an issue on the possibility of the study. That's one issue. Is there any other things that need to come before the conference committee? Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have an issue to raise, and I've been looking for the provisions related to the correctional plan and vesting periods going to 10 years, which is different, I think, than any of the other provisions. Where I think we're going to 5 years for most of the other plans. And I don't remember the discussion specifically about that particular issue during the Pension Commission. I probably missed the discussion. But if there's a reason that, concern has been raised by certain parts of the correctional community, particularly the nurses, who don't stay as long a time typically as the correctional officers themselves, who will, you know, be less likely to fully vest their pension under this provision and are more likely to, we may have a recruitment problem too within the correctional plan. So maybe while we're talking about this other thing, we could find out what that provision is in the bill.
Well, and maybe the appropriate fund could come forward. I heard about it last week from the nurses, but to be honest with you, I mean, this issue has been out there for a couple of months. I don't know when they found out about it, but I have no idea what the plan's position is on it. And I don't know that it's something that needs to be addressed right now. I mean, it can be addressed next year just as well as this year. I mean, you know, we're still here. But I find it a little bit troubling that something has been out here for a few months and somebody comes in just as we're ready to pass the bills and all of a sudden, oh, by the way, I mean, there's a whole bunch of folks that probably would like to tack on things in here, but that's why we've been working on this bill for a year, folks. Representative Kahn?
Well, I think the problem is we put that in because of tales of, you know, egregious misuses of transfer to the correctional plan.
Section 22.
Plan from people that had, from people that really just kind of got into it very late at light, late in life. And the correctional plan, you know, the correctional plan is a very, has highly positive, positive parts of it that is kind of not fair to assume by just being in it for a few years.
Well, and that
it's
was an
very
issue.
Different. And we heard some, again, I can't mm-hmm. repeat them, but we heard some really, you know, pretty bad stories of what I would certainly consider to be abuse.
Well, as you recall, we heard it on St. Patrick's Day last year. I remember that hearing very well.
Okay.
I shouldn't have done it on St. Patrick's Day, but I did. Okay. But that's what we heard the testimony, and the problem was that by lowering the vesting period to 3 years, there were people that were going in there not because they wanted a pension, but because they got 10 years of health care benefits by working 3 years for corrections. And this extends it out, the vesting period out, so that people aren't taking – The health care issue was not something that the Pension Commission ever did. It was a collective bargaining issue. But by extending the vesting time period, that made it more difficult for people basically to be using the system that way. So that was the issue.
Mr.
Yeah.
Chairman, and I think that was the decision in terms of, well, could you cut back on that? That a one-for-one seemed reasonably fair.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the 10-year...
Yeah.
And no one else has this kind of benefit. But that's why the 10 years seem fair for that.
Did somebody, Representative Thiessen, did you have wish some testimony? Did you want to pursue this at all, or where are we at?
Yeah, I do. I'd like Ms.
Okay. Come on forward. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carrie Mortrud, and I'm staff for the Minnesota Nurses Association. And I want to acknowledge the lateness of our raising the concern. We were monitoring this as you were discussing and having the hearings and realizing the position that you were put in of making the kinds of decisions and cuts. We opted at that time not to come forward. As we have done some more research to find out why the difference, it just raised more concern for us regarding recruitment. The nurses in the state service are some of the oldest state employees that we have. And so when they come to work in the corrections, they're already senior, 55, 56, 57. And so they've been recruited with the idea that they could retire after 3 years vesting with a pension, as well as now the 5 years, and some cases 10 years with the insurance. And so changing this 3 years vesting for the pension to 10 years is going to see a huge hit for us as far as recruiting. Some of the younger nurses coming into state service at 25, 26, 27 aren't looking at corrections as the place to start their career and stay forever. Unfortunately, it's more of our senior nurses who see the importance of working with inmates, those with mental illness, et cetera, and are putting themselves in that position. So as Senator Lynch had mentioned about the recruitment, that's what we're really concerned about, is that we're not going to be able to fill those positions as some of these senior nurses leave.
As you may recall, Ms. Marchard, last year the governor actually was trying to move everybody out of the corrections plan into MSRS over this very issue of the health care benefits after 3 years. And, of course, that was not something that was supported in the legislature, but we did recognize that there was an issue there and a problem there. So what do we do here? I mean, I think we all feel that there's a problem. So,
Mr. Chair, and we appreciated everything you did last year to make that, because that was one of our huge concerns. Our negotiating team for the state did change that insurance along with a lot of the other groups. So they went to the 10 years realizing how expensive that 3 years was. Retiring at 65, knowing that you're eligible to apply for Medicare, but knowing you have a pension you can retire with, is much different than hitting 65 and realizing that you're not vested in a pension and having to stay until you're 66, 67, 68, whenever they were recruited to that, into corrections.
Have you talked about this, your group talked about it with MSRS and raised those concerns there? I mean, you brought it to our attention, but I don't know if they've talked about it. So,
Mr. Chair and members, I spoke with Senator Betzel as well as Representative Murphy, who asked me to speak with Dave Bergstrom, and I did, and he actually got me a chart that laid out the differences in what the savings would be. So we do have that information. And I think the board and some of the groups went through different scenarios, and the thought was that a majority of folks who work in corrections start their career there and stay. And so the idea was that it would be okay to go to 10 years because most of the employees are there for their career. However, it's very different with the group of nurses that we have working there.
Mr. Bergstrom, could you weigh in here too and keep us informed as to, I don't know whether this is something that's been considered by MSRS or not. Mr. Bergstrom?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, my name is Dave Bergstrom. I'm the director of the State Retirement System. The MSRS board did look at 5 year, did look at 10 year, and also the correctional plan. They felt very strongly that the correctional plan was career oriented. The correctional representative on our board was actually the one who pursued the 10 years after he had talked to some folks. And the difference in savings from a contribution rate standpoint, if my memory serves me right, a 10-year vesting is equal to 1.1% of contributions and 5-year vesting is 0.4. So there is considerable difference in the cost of 10-year vesting to 5-year vesting.
I think you can cash in.
Senator Lynch?
Mr. Chair, is there a federal, federal rule on vesting?
No, I think these are state pensions, and I think it's what we said here, isn't it? These are state pension funds. Where was it gone?
Does this apply to all employees or to new employees?
We're only dealing with new employees.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, this is new employees.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Current is 10 years.
Yeah.
think to answer Senator Lynch's question, yeah, these plans aren't covered by ERISA, which is the federal insurance. But ERISA-backed pensions in the private sector have to have five-year vesting to be covered by ERISA. It used to be 10, and it went to 5, I want to say in the 80s. But, yeah, that's that. But that's for federal-backed pensions. These are not backed by ERISA. They're backed by the state.
Again, I think we're seeing the reverse argument. We just heard we're not going to be hiring any new people, and now we have to I think we had decided that this was the only way to fix it. We had looked at a one-to-one, trying to say one-to-one arrangement, that you got 1 year of health care for every year that you serve for the under 10, for the people who are in under 10 years. And I guess it was decided that we couldn't do that, that was interfering with the bargaining. With the bargaining process, so I really think we ought to leave this the way it is. I mean, I think that was a very expensive thing that we were looking at. That no one, I think no one would ever think that was a just condition compared to, we have the early retirement and we have the additional 10 years to match with the early retirement, but it really is based on a, career of working all the time in corrections. And if this special group doesn't do that, well, from now on, they'll know it before they get into it. So.
Rob Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My understanding is that the health care thing was solved through collective bargaining. And so that's not an issue anymore.
Well,
so.
I don't know if it was or not. I don't know.
I see nodding heads, and that's my understanding. So the healthcare piece of it was resolved through collective bargaining. So now all we're talking about is the vesting of the pension, and we're treating this pension differently than all the other pensions in terms of vesting.
Apparently most but not all bargaining units went to 10 years.
Right.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, in the defense of the nurses, conflict and in all those discussions, the nurses were never pointed out as being the abusive ones. And I would like to know how many nurses are there in the correction system?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I believe that we have 63. So it's not a huge number.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Bergstrom.
If you are looking at some kind of a compromise, one thing that might be possible, para, police, and fire went to graded vesting from 5 to 10 years, and that might be an alternative to look at. It still would save significant amount of money.
5 years, 60%, yeah. 6 years, 70% in 7 years.
Okay.
So that might be something to consider because it's consistent with the para, police, and fire fund. And so I just throw that out if you're looking for a solution, but still save a significant amount of money.
Members, if you're looking to that provision, it's about page 16 of either version of the bill.
Section 22.
So section 22 of Article 1.
Well, I tell you what, we could have a, I looked up Joint Rule 203, we can, conference committees can meet till midnight. I don't plan to do that, but that's how long conference committees can meet. If it's the desire of the conference committee, as Representative Smith suggested, we could probably, I'd like to find out what issues are out there. If we are not ready to wrap it up tonight, we don't have to, but if there's a desire, to look at this issue, we can have an amendment drafted up and have it presented tomorrow when we meet, depending on if the House chair wants to meet tomorrow. And then we would, could look at that then and so forth. But what's the desire? Do you want to? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, the House chair would prefer that the Senate chair finish the bill.
Okay.
But tonight. But we could just.
Well, Representative Thiessen,
we could vote on the concept.
Yeah, do you have a motion to change the nurses' vesting to a particular time period? I think we can fit it in. So.
Yeah, I would move
graduated
that we go to the graduated vesting as they did for the local corrections and for local police and fire, for para police and fire and para local collections. Did I say corrections? I meant, yes.
Similar to 16.
Yeah. Is there something that you're going to put together if we vote on that?
17.
Yeah. Because or section 22, Article 1, section 22.
Okay. No. Oh, yeah. Okay, so, okay, Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, that wouldn't, just to clarify, that would apply to all new employees, not just the nurses.
Yes.
I just want to.
All new employees.
No, all new employees would.
In the correction
plan. In the correctional plan.
In the correction
plan. Yes. Yeah, I just want to clarify.
In the correctional plan.
Yeah.
So you have 63 people.
What is it now for all new employees?
I know.
In the bill.
What you think, but Mr. Chairman, the 63, I don't know how big the correctional system is, but the 63 has got to be.
We have 63 nurses.
63 nurses. So we're changing the whole correctional plan, which to be a much more expensive provision because of
Representative Thiessen.
Madam Chair, it's a difference between $2.3 million and $833,000 a year. That would be the difference between 10 years and 5 years, and we're doing something not even it would be less expensive than that. You can look at this if you want. I mean, so we're talking. I mean, it's a percent. I mean, in terms of payroll, because it's a fairly small fund, I would imagine, but the dollar amounts are not very significant.
Okay. Well, Representative Thiessen has moved that we change the MSRS correction vesting plan to a graduated vesting plan similar to PERA, police, and fire.
Mr. Chair.
Is that Senator Pappas?
Could I just have a review of what current law is and what is in the bill? And then what we're changing it to.
Mr. Bergstrom, how would you describe that?
Mr. Chair, under current law, we have 3-year vesting. In the bill, it has 10-year vesting. What is the proposal in front of you would be at 5 years of service would be 50% vested, at 6 years, 60%, fully vested at 10.
And MSRS Corrections has 4,403 employees.
And this is just new employees
just
that are not
going to
be
forward,
hired in the next couple of years.
I would say the probability of not hiring a needed person in corrections is from 0 to 0.01.
Well, Mr. Chairman, remember though that we have a lot of bumping rights within the system. So
not
at least 100 positions open in corrections right now.
Oh, let's go apply.
Yeah, you do. You can go right
okay. Again, well, so just further discussion.
I'm sure.
I think it's fine the way it is.
Okay. Further discussion. Okay. Representative Thiessen moves that we change the MSRS corrections vesting plan from 10 years to a graduated vesting plan similar to PERA, police, and fire. Okay. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. No.
No.
The motion prevails. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else that anybody wants to bring to our attention that has not been addressed in the bill that we have before us? I do want to circle back to Representative Smith's point in a moment, but just anything else? If not, then Representative Murphy moves and all the same provisions that are in the House and Senate version for Senate File 2918 be adopted.
I'm sorry,
Representative
Thiessen. What did you just mean?
Just all the other same provisions. We haven't adopted them yet. The same positions.
Okay.
Because we haven't adopted the same positions are identical in both bills. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Okay. Anything else to bring to our attention? Representative Smith, you talked about the study, and you felt that this is something the governor would like to see some reform. It would take a vote from somebody on the prevailing side, since the motion did not prevail, or to reconsider that.
We have prevailing side rules in Congress Committee.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
We don't committee.
Committees don't have.
Oh, that's right. Okay, because you never really defeat something; you can always bring it back up. Yeah. I'm sorry. You're right. It's different. And okay, so it can be moved at any time. Does somebody wish to move anything here, whether it's study or anything else? Have we got any other business to come before us, folks?
because I'd like to move the language that we worked on that Mr. Martin had.
Do you still have that available? So.
It's on my desk.
It's on his desk, which is...
Right.
No, you'll be revisiting it.
Yeah, I didn't know either. Okay.
Say, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Sarah Dill.
I think there may be some testimony here, maybe some improved language.
Okay.
Yeah, we rewrote the
Ms. Hacking?
Mr. Chair, Laurie Hacking with TRA. In the interim, thinking that you might revisit this issue, we spent a little time working on the language. So to make it a bit more specific and comprehensive, so I'll just read it to you. The executive directors of MSRS.
Do you have that written out?
Yes.
We can have it photocopied.
Okay.
Is it legible?
Of course.
Okay. Well, I just
asked. That's a good question to ask.
Nobody would ask that if I
thought maybe it was this.
I have bad handwriting, so I understand. And okay. And Mr. Bergstrom has bad handwriting, too.
So can Representative Nelson withdraw his motion on that so I can raise something else?
Yeah.
I'll withdraw my motion until we get the language back.
Okay.
So I would like to move that we going to the MRF issue, mm-hmm. that we go to the, that we adopt the House position instead of the $27.5 million in the out years, we go to the $15 million.
Well, if the House position includes the $10 million in biennium,
no.
That, okay.
Okay,
it's just the out years.
I thought we already adopted it.
We did. Well,
moving to reconsider.
I
didn't hear that.
We adopted the 13.75 in fiscal year.
And so,
12.
Let me explain what I'd like to do.
Yeah.
Okay, so the motion would be to keep the 13.75
mm-hmm.
million 13 in 20 starting in June 2011 for that fiscal year.
Okay.
13.75 starting in June or July 1st to 2012 for that fiscal year. So that would stay the same, but instead of going to 27.5 million a year in the years beyond that,
mm-hmm.
I'd like us to adopt the House position, which did pass very strongly in the House at $15 million a year going forward. So that's the state's contribution. So basically what I'm saying is in the years beyond the next biennium, we would be doing $15 million a year instead of $27.5 million a year.
1.5.
So it would be reducing
it.
So
from 13.75
to 27.5 down to 15.
A
year.
A year.
In 2014 and 2015.
In the out years. After.
Out years.
So basically what the funding would
the tails.
Be. In the tails.
Tails.
Okay. So let me try to describe it again.
Okay.
So what we have before us
That's
right
good.
Now is starting, we're doing nothing in the upcoming year, this biennium. So in the 2 years of the next biennium.
Which is 12 and 13.
12 and 13, we're doing $13.75 million a year.
Right.
And we're going to keep that. In the years after that, what we passed before was $27.5 million a year, and I'm proposing that we bring that down to $15 million a year, which was the position that passed the House.
Mr. Chair.
Sarah Higgins.
Does somebody else make up that difference? So it just takes that much longer to bring it to a more healthy position.
Yeah.
And Mr. Chair, we did some the House position gets to full funding in 2032 instead of 2031, the way it's drafted, the way it's written. Is that right?
Can somebody from MRF here weigh in whether this is going to work or not? Because we don't want to set it up for underfunding and have the crisis continue. Mr. Thompson?
Luther Thompson, representing MRF. Yes, this would work. You know, the difference between the two positions originally was in the House, there would be $15 million a year starting in 2012, and in the Senate, there would be $27.5 million. And what has been proposed here is to simply start in the way I understand it on July 1 of 2011 with 13.5, I believe, is what Representative Thiessen has said, 13.5 the next year, and then it would go to the $15 million a year. And then you would have the minimum and the you know, the floor and the ceiling in there as well. And he is right. I mean, this would probably extend the amortization, I mean, the full funding date probably 1 or 2 years. If you had better returns than expected, it would be shorter than that.
Okay.
It doesn't, it would not, the additional liability from this would rest on the employers.
Representative Nelson.
Just I'm looking at the language here, Mr. Chair.
Oops, well, we're still on the TESON.
The TESON, yeah. I'm looking at the I'm looking at the language here in the side by side.
Okay, I see. Okay.
Of this, and so it's I read this. It's 9,000 plus 15,000 or 24.
9 million.
9 million.
There's a 9 million standing appropriation. Okay,
and
we
this
have.
We're talking 15 million.
And we're
more.
Adding on to that.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. So okay, that's so want to clarify. As opposed to the Senate language was 9 million. Plus the 27.5, making it 36.5. Right. So,
yeah, the 9 million has been carried in the state government budget division that Representative Kahn and I have been carrying the last few years. So, okay, this adds on to that.
That's I just wanted to clarify
yes,
that.
Thank you,
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, I didn't hear why you wanted to do this.
Mr. Chair, because the House passed this bill with 20. Red votes and a bunch of Republicans voting for this bill at this funding level. I think if we go to 27.5 million, which passed the Senate, I think with three Republican votes, if I'm not four, that we're going to have trouble passing it. And with some Republicans, which is what we need to get a governor's signature. And I want to make sure that we can do something that works for Murph, because I think it's that important, but also something that that it appears to me the Republicans in the House caucus, which the governor, who the governor looks to do this, to you know, on these issues, that he will sign the bill.
And
it's a political,
right.
Political.
And if the economy does a dramatic turnaround and future legislature decides that things look better and decide to increase the ante, they can do that. However, although we commit to things around here all the time and let future legislatures decide whether to do it or not, when you're making a promise in pensions, you better be prepared to keep it.
Yeah.
This is a little bit different from some of the other funding stuff that we do, so... Whether it's 27.5 million or 15 million or whatever the number is, if we spot that number, we do expect future legislatures are going to stick by it as long as this fund is in trouble. So,
and I'd also just kind of to that point, I mean, one of the ways that we've moved this bill through the House is we work closely with Representative Kiffmeyer and other House Republicans, and this is kind of, you know, where we work to as well. So just to kind of build on that point.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I understand the proposal, but can I ask a really dumb question?
Go ahead.
How does it work that if you're about not quite having the amount of money that you're putting in from fiscal 14 to fiscal 31, it only takes another year to get to full funding?
Well, Mr. Thompson can explain.
Yeah.
Person. I was an English major.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, by putting the lower amount of money in there, it does not reduce the amount of money that's coming into MRF. What will happen is the employer's share goes up. So if you add the 9 and the 15, that's 24 million. That's what the state's contribution essentially is. The employers then have agreed to pay a minimum of 31 million, and a ceiling up to 34 million. So if you're getting less from the state, the employer's portion will be larger. And if it's not enough in the long term, the entire additional supplemental falls on the employers as well. It's, you know, and the floor and the ceiling really is a budgeting mechanism that makes it easier for the employers to predict what their liability is. I mean, their payments will be, but it will not reduce their overall liability in the long term.
I guess the question would be, then, does the city of Minneapolis have any concerns about this?
Yeah, so, that's what's going to be my next question. I see Park Board represented.
Mr. Neri, welcome to the Pension Commission. Please identify yourself for the record.
And the Airport Commission.
Yeah.
Hennepin County, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Gene Ranieri. I'm the IGR Director for the city of Minneapolis. The city itself has about two-thirds of the total cost of the local employers. We met with the other employers, and this proposal, which was drafted in the House, worked closely with Representative Thiessen, our own staff, some of our own council members, was acceptable to us. It does give us a floor and a ceiling. We were concerned in the Senate language that there really was, if there was a downside in the economy, we would share, the employers would share in all the downside risk. This gives us a minimum of $27 million, I think, in the bill, and a floor of, I think, of $34 million. So it helps us to budget. And Senator Higgins, you are correct. When you add ourselves, the park board, and the school district, about 88% of the total liability of the local employers is upon the city of Minneapolis's governments. The remainder comes from the MAC, the county, and the Metropolitan Council.
Okay.
This is something that we had planned when we were putting this bill together. Some, these are the amounts, generally the amounts we were planning to contribute starting in 2012.
Okay. Is there anybody else who wants to be heard on this issue? I guess, Representative Thiessen, you'd have to move to reconsider the vote by which we decided that starting in fiscal year 2014, the state's contribution would be $27.5 million. Is that? We'd have to reconsider that to put it back.
Or can't we? We'd adopt it all the same and similar at this point. Can't I just amend what we've done so far?
Yeah, I guess that's.
Well,
yeah.
We can.
Sure.
Well, we specifically adopted that.
All right, I'll
that
move
provision.
To reconsider.
Okay,
sure.
Yeah, this is not a same and similar.
This was not a same and similar. So Representative Thiessen moves that we reconsider the vote by which we agreed that starting in fiscal year 2014, the legislature's contribution to MRF would be $27.5 million. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, motion prevails. And Representative Thiessen, you now move that starting fiscal year 2014, the legislature's contribution in addition to the $9 million, would be
$15
million. So discussion of that motion. Representative Nelson.
And DeHone, I think I remember him saying the first 2 years would be 13.75 and then going
right.
to the 15.
We've adopted that part. That was not reconsidered.
Okay.
We're only reconsidering after 2013, starting in fiscal year 2014.
Just
reduce it to 27.5 to now $15 million in addition to the 9. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say no. Motion prevails.
So,
comment, when I hear these numbers and the effect it is and recalling the effect of what happens with earlier contributions compared to later ones, Senator Merriam had to have cut the 13 down to 9 whenever he was chair of finance. We maybe wouldn't be in any trouble at all.
Professor Collins, didn't we also skim off some money for some other purposes in the state government budget conference committee in about 1998 or 7 or something?
He was looking forward.
Never mind. Never mind.
Mr.
Okay,
Chair.
I'll go there. Okay. So.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the language as
the handwritten,
the
well
handwritten language from
the well written,
read it out,
the well handwritten language from Ms. Hacking.
Read it. Somebody read it out.
Somebody read this because I'm having. Okay.
The executive directors of MSRS, PARA, and TRA shall jointly conduct a study of defined benefit, defined contribution, and other alternative retirement plans for Minnesota public employees. The study shall include analysis of the feasibility, sustainability, financial impacts, and other design considerations of such retirement plans. The report shall be provided no later than June 1st, 2011. For 2011, to the chairs and executive director of the LCPR.
It probably should be the chair and the vice.
And ranking.
Chair. Well, we don't really have ranking.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
with
the
pension. We could add that, I guess. But since the chair and the vice chair are from different bodies, you know, we should make sure that both of them
I'll
get the report.
I'll incorporate that in.
Chair and vice chair. Okay.
And then Mr. Chair. If I may do the Senator
yes.
Frederickson amendment.
Yes. The such?
Delete the such and put in these.
Where? Which line?
It's the only place such is in there.
These? Okay.
Then we'll do the con amendment and delete the shall and do must.
On the second line?
All English majors tonight.
Mr. Chairman,
every shall, make every shall a must.
Okay, we're trying to get the must. Okay. Let's see. Representative Smith.
Why is that?
Mr.
Did
Chairman,
what
was the reason that this report won't be ready until after next session? January 15th is in the side-by-side the handwritten one up until June 1. I understand. Why is it June 1?
Is there, yeah. Ms. Hocking.
Mr. Chair and members, Laurie Hacking with TRA. The reason we put the June 1st date is that, quite frankly, there's going to have to be a fair amount of actuarial work done for this study to estimate financial impacts. And our actuary is really very consumed through December getting out our valuations to meet your deadlines, actually. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we thought it would be really a push to try to get you something by January 1. And there would
Chairman,
be...
Chairman, the problem with that is that I can think of at least 46 people in the House who are going to be irritated that they aren't going to see this report in time to do anything with it.
It'll be a two-year cycle, and it'll be an interim issue, but...
Well, I'm just saying that these kind of detailed studies are almost always done in the interim anyway, so it's kind of comes at the right time. If we got it in January 1st and we're going to make major changes, I don't think we'd be able to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I...
Split the difference, make it March 19th.
Well, you know, given the fact that, I mean, we're coming off an election, last time the Senate didn't even make its appointments until March, you know, so I hope that doesn't happen again, but we got a late start, you know, at the start of the Senate term anyway, so...
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Ms. Hacking, what to get it into the legislative session, could we move this up to April?
April 1. Would
that be possible? That way it would we'd still be in session.
Well, but that'll be after the deadlines, and hopefully the Pension Commission will be done with its work.
But I mean,
we
can see the report, and that way the legislature. My thinking is that way the legislature would be able to see it and have some discussion about it. That's just a thought.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Babbitt.
The likely place for the discussion, and I think the discussion would probably most likely occur during the interim in the Pension Commission, because we would need quite a bit of time to have this discussion. So I think this fits. I mean, unless you can get it done in January, which Ms. Hacking said they can't, then I don't think it makes any sense to do it during the legislative session at all.
Yeah. Any further discussion on Representative Thiessen?
I'd like to offer an amendment.
Yeah.
After the words retirement plans, put a comma, including the amount of additional money immediately needed to fund a defined contribution plan.
You better read that real slowly.
Yep. Comma, including the amount of additional money immediately needed to transition to a defined contribution plan.
Okay, so what you said was on the third line after retirement plans, put a comma, including the amount of additional.
On the fourth to last line.
The fourth to last line. Huh. One, two, three. That's
retirement
plans.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. These words as such, we change the. Okay, including the, what is it?
These retirement plans, comma.
Right.
Including the amount of additional money immediately needed to transition to a defined contribution plan.
Okay.
So a sense of the financial impact.
Okay, so well, Representative Nelson is offering the amendment. Did you want to incorporate
that? I'll incorporate that into the amendment.
Okay.
Into the.
You have everything? So, okay. Does anybody want to be heard on this amendment? Anybody else want to weigh in here?
How does that differ? How is that not covered by the words financial impacts?
From the previous amendment? You think?
From this amendment.
From this amendment.
Yes.
How does this
financial
new
impacts.
Amendment, how is it not covered by the two words financial impacts?
Feasibility.
It's your offering.
Because I like more words. Why do you care?
I care about some of my friends. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I think it's too wordy, and I think it's going to spook some folks that like the original amendment. I would suggest that you rethink and maybe not pull it off. Representative Kahn is right. Feasibility, I think, is a marvelous word.
Financial impact.
It's both embracing and watering.
Feasibility.
Okay, Nelson, you're getting sterile. Do you want to incorporate this language?
I will acquiesce to the more senior members that and
both parties
not accept that language.
Okay.
And wise, then we can vote on it.
Okay. Anybody else want to be heard? I'll say, let's, Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, would this language, as we have it now, also consider the effect of closing the funds and what the effect of having three big honking closed funds would be?
That's what feasibility, yeah,
that's what feasibility and all of those.
They're shaking their heads.
Okay.
Yes.
My question.
Sarah Lynch?
Feasibility, sustainability, and financial impacts covers all that.
Sarah Lynch, did you have a...
Well, Mr. Chair, once again, I'm going to speak against the amendment. I'm uncomfortable moving forward in this direction. I would much prefer that we have, outside of this meeting tonight and the work of this conference committee, I'd much prefer that... members of this commission would have a meeting to discuss the things that we'd like to focus on and work on during the interim. And I feel like what we're potentially doing tonight is a particular entity or group or some interested parties have come up with an idea that they would like the commission to pursue. And I think it's premature to run down this road without considering all of the other things that might be potential areas of study and work for the commission.
Well, we'll probably have a meeting in June of the pension commission because I think we've got an actuarial report. We've got some report that we have to adopt. But other than that, I'm not planning on any meetings during the interim simply because you got elections going on. Plus, how can I prepare a bill for next year's commission and next year's legislature when I don't even know who's going to be doing what next year? It was easy last year because I knew we were all going to be here. But I don't know what's going to happen next year, so I think it would be a bit presumptuous. So I'm not going to try to plan it. Now, next year the House will have the gavel, however the House wants to run the commission. I mean, what I did was just did only the things that had to be done the first session, did all the work for the interim, and then we had this bill ready to go this year. But, you know, we don't – the House has the gavel for next year. They'll set the agenda.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, if I may, the work that's being suggested here could be done without this language.
Correct.
Could be done without this language.
Correct. However, I think that the governor would like to see something in this bill that indicates that we are looking at reform issues, and if this is that something that he's looking for,
Mr. Chair,
I'm willing to accept it. Representative Nelson.
I guess I, too, agree with Senator Lynch about I don't think this is the way we should go as far as the pension going to defined contributions. But I think I'm not afraid of looking at the study. I think quite similar to a bill that Representative Clark had on the floor that they wanted a study for a power line, and Xcel agreed to it, basically saying that we feel that the study's going to prove our point. And I think this study with some of the other ones I've read in the past will prove our point that defined benefit pensions are more cost-effective for the state to have. And so I'm not afraid of this study, and I guess that's why I'd like to go forward with it. And if it helps us get a signed bill with the governor and helps us get some votes on the House floor, I think this is a good thing to have in here. And again, like I said, I'm not afraid of it. I think it's going to show what I believe to be true, that defined benefit plans are better for the state.
Senator Thiessen, you got it?
Well, no, I'll pass.
Okay. Anything else on this issue? If not, let's see. Representative Nelson moved the handwritten language as modified. Is there further discussion on that motion? Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, before you take the vote, have you had any communications from the governor's office on anything in the pension bill?
I have not. No one has talked to me.
Is there anybody here from the governor's office that would like to clarify that something is important to them to have in this bill?
Representative,
Mr. Chair, I called the governor's office. They just left me a message that they won't come and testify. I did have a conversation with representatives, though, and this is something that, you know, this is something that came up in those conversations.
This, you mean, the study? Okay. It came up meaning they like the idea. I take it.
Sir, yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Have we dealt with the June 1 topic?
No, there hasn't been a motion to do that. You raised it as an issue, but nobody has suggested changing that. But did you want to suggest amending this?
I guess I would, and frankly, I much prefer the January 15th date. Again, I know how some of my friends on the House floor would prefer that. I think June 1 puts it way far out. April 1 would be a compromise. Let me just tongue-in-cheek suggest, I don't know what the last day in March is, but if they can have it done by April 1, I would suggest a March date for a couple reasons. First of all, the first car I bought was an American Motors Gremlin. It was a very beautiful car, and I enjoyed it. But for two reasons, it was both good and bad. First of all, it was introduced on April 1 in 1970, which was
Gremlin. Okay.
Pointed out by its detractors that was April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
Secondly, however, there's two sides to every coin. The price of the car was $1,995. It could have been $5 more on April 1st, which would have rounded off at two, but the American psyche sees the 1995. So if it can be done by April 1, I would suggest for two reasons it be rolled to March 30th or 31st, whichever 31st. It is the last day of March.
March 31st is a Thursday next year. So
I would just suggest get it done by mid-session. That'll give some comfort where I think it will come.
Yeah, well, Ms. Hacking, I mean, what's your thoughts? I recognize you've got the actuaries.
Yeah, Laurie Hacking, I would, if it were going to be January 15th, I was just going to point out that we would then have to use old data. We couldn't use the new fiscal 2010 data because there just isn't enough time.
Well,
Ms.
Hacking, could you get some new data and a study done by March
31st? I think so. That might be, it'll be a push, but I think there's at least the possibility of that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, however you procedurally, I guess I would like to move.
If you want to move to change June 1st to 2011 to March 31st?
Yes.
Okay, that's the motion before us. Discussion on that motion.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I really just don't see us doing anything with this study, seriously, with this study between March 31st and the end in the next, it's kind of 6 weeks to the end of the session. And I think just to make something look good, it's sort of silly to try and rush something then.
I believe next year the Passover Easter time period, which is when the legislature usually takes a break and wants, is actually towards late April. I don't know how that's going to affect committee deadlines and so forth, but I would think by the end of March things are going to have to be at a certain point or they're not going to happen at all, and that's would usually be kind of late even in a long year, but that's... Well, anyway, okay, Representative Smith has the motion for March 31st. Discussion of that motion. Senator Lynch.
Mr. Chair, I would just note for the record that I don't think that moving the deadline up does anything for the work of the commission. We will not be able to process any report or any recommendations in that legislative session. So I think it's disingenuous to suggest that in order that we get the report so that we can do some action on it, this is a little bit different. It's a different mechanism than might typically be done with a report from the legislative auditor that any member might pick up and run with during a legislative session.
Complicated.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't have anything intelligent or constructive to add, but I would just note that you can pass whatever you want to off the floor of the House with 87 votes. You don't need so much as one Republican, but you do have another Republican down the hall that you might want to think about it.
Yeah. Well, the motion for President Smith is to change June 1st to March 31st. Discussion, further discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
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 The chair is in doubt. Those in favor, please raise your hands. 2, 3, 4. Okay. Motion fails. Okay. So then Representative Nelson moves that the beautifully handwritten language as modified before us be adopted. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no.
No.
Motion prevails. Okay. So, is there anything else? Is there anything else that anybody wants to bring before this conference committee regarding the pension bill, Senate File 2918, as amended? Going once, going twice. Seeing none, Representative Murphy moves that the conference committee report by Senate File 2918 as amended be adopted as the conference committee report. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, say no. Motion prevails. Thank you. The report will probably be prepared tomorrow morning. We'll round robin it and get the signatures on it. Because of the 12-hour rule, that means that it could be taken up on Wednesday in each body. It's a Senate file, so the Senate will have to take it up first. Anything further to come before the conference committee? Seeing none, thank you, members, for all your work during the session. I hope we don't have any more meetings, but otherwise, meetings adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for meeting publicly.
Yes, yes.
A lot easier to get things resolved.